Epilogue. "Guess what, sir? For once, we have some good news to give to Kenneth Harcourt." Robbie Melton smiled happily. Jackman and Marie looked up from their undiminishing pile of reports. Jackman closed the file he'd been working on. "Okay, spill the beans. Don't just stand there grinning."
"I was down talking to the duty sergeant at the front desk and this young bloke walks in. Says he wants to confess to a crime. Well, I was all ears, naturally."
"Hurry up, Melton. What crime?"
Marie asked impatiently.
"He's admitted to driving the car that killed Kirsty Harcourt. Chris Keyes was his best mate. So, because he had been drinking and was starting a new job that week, that had to have a clean driving licence, Chris took the flak. He told us that now his friend was dead, he couldn't live with himself, knowing that everyone believed Chris had run a girl down and not stopped."
"Well, I'm absolutely delighted to hear that," said Marie. "Kenneth Harcourt will finally be able to stop wondering what really happened."
"And now someone has accepted the blame, perhaps we'll be able to move on," added Jackman.
"I was told he's selling the gun club," said Marie, "and his private collection."
"I heard that too. He's probably had enough of guns and the heartbreak they cause."
Jackman remembered the look on Harcourt's face when he discovered that it was his gun that had killed his friend Arthur.
"We'll take a trip out this afternoon, Marie, and give him the news."
"Oh, good. And please, this time, can I ask him why his house is called Wits End? Go on, let me..."
He laughed. "Okay, if you must. But try to be tactful."
It was a good feeling to be delivering positive news for once. He and Marie had spent a lot of time with Rachel Lorimer and her family recently. They had come away full of respect for the way she had managed all those years with no help. And then Ashcroft in his guise as kind Uncle Ezra had done so much damage to them. Laura had offered to talk to them, especially Jacob, who was suffering from the loss of his brother, and it did seem to be helping.
"Boss, would you have time to sit down with the rest of us and fill in a few gaps?" Robbie asked.
"Sure. Is the team all in the CID room now?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then get everyone a drink."
He passed Robbie a handful of coins. "And I'll be out in 5. Jackman perched on the edge of Marie's desk and began.
"First, Sam Page is out of hospital and recovering well. He's staying with us at Mill Corner for a while until he can cope on his own. He sends his regards to you all."
"He gave us a fright, all right," said Gary.
"Poor guy, what a shock. I'm really glad he's doing well." "And you'll be pleased to hear that Kevin Stoner will be joining us at the end of the month. He's another one recovering from damage Alistair Ashcroft inflicted."
Jackman looked at the assembled team.
"So, loose ends?"
"What will happen to Ashcroft, sir?"
asked Robbie.
"As you know, he's on remand until his trial, and then it will be down to the judge and jury to decide."
He frowned.
"We have enough evidence to lock him up for life, but the question will be whether he's of sound mind. His defence might claim not guilty by reason of insanity, or possibly that he's guilty, but insane or mentally ill, which would mean he'd be committed to a psychiatric facility."
"Is there a chance the jury will decide that he'd been perfectly in command of his faculties when he committed those atrocities? That he is simply an evil killer?"
asked Charlie Button. Jackman shrugged.
"There is a chance, of course. Then he would go to a Cat A maximum security prison somewhere like Frankland or Wakefield."
"Where he belongs with the other monsters," muttered Max. "One thing's for sure, he won't be doing a runner, not with no kneecaps."
"It's in the lap of the gods, isn't it, sir?" said Marie. "Let's hope he comes up against a shit-hot prosecution lawyer out to make a name for themselves.
Plus one of those judges that would bring back hanging if they had half a chance," added Max.
For once, they were able to laugh at Ashcroft's expense. They had spent years with his presence hanging over them, like the sword of Damocles. And of all people, it was the crazy Lorimer family that had given them the freedom to joke again. Jackman looked at the team, relaxed and cheerful once more.
"Listen up, guys. You will all be wanting to know exactly what happened that night. There's been a lot of rumours going the rounds, I know, but Superintendent Crook wanted to keep things under wraps until some of the trickier details had been sorted out."
"About poor Lorimer?" asked Robbie.
And the part his mother and sister played in it. Jackman got off the desk and brought a chair over to the group. This is where it gets a bit complicated. Ashcroft lured Paul to where he was staying by deliberately leaving a letter with an address where Paul would find it. Paul went to look for him in order to punish him for murdering Ezra, and Ashcroft ambushed him. He then spun Paul a whole web of lies about being best buddies with Ezra, swearing he wasn't responsible for his murder. Paul pretended to fall for his story. Ashcroft then offered him a lot of money to help him set up a secret meeting between him, Marie, and I, ostensibly to clear his name. Paul suspected it was a crock of shit, but at this point he decided he could have the best of both worlds, keep the money and take revenge on Ashcroft for the damage he'd done to his family. I thought he was a bit slow, but that took brains and cunning. Gary looked puzzled. Rachel told me that he was academically challenged, sometimes childish, had anger issues and could be pretty unstable. But he wasn't stupid. Paul wasn't about to trust Ashcroft out of the lies he'd told, but he was scared of him. Ashcroft made two mistakes with Paul. He underestimated him, and he had no idea that he had a mobile phone and a gun hidden in his car. Sloppy. Max smiled like the Cheshire Cat. So, on Ashcroft's orders, Paul made the phone call to his mother saying he'd got drunk and was sleeping it off. Then, as soon as Ashcroft went out, Paul phoned her again on his hidden mobile, one she knew nothing about, incidentally, told her the truth and explained what Ashcroft was planning. Gary exhaled. But wasn't Ashcroft going to kill him? I'm guessing Paul hadn't worked that one out. Probably not. But what he did realize was that Ashcroft didn't want to talk to Marie and me at all. He wanted to kill us. And Paul wasn't going to let that happen. Then he realized he'd bitten off more than he could chew, and so asked for his mother's help. According to Rachel, said Marie, Ashcroft had done enough damage without killing little Marie Evans and that boss of hers. She reckons he's all right, that Jackman, for a copper, that is. They all laughed. So Paul made that desperate call to you about Ashcroft abducting his mother, and it was all acting? Asked Charlie.
Very good acting, too. His life depended on it. But he'd already told his ma where the meeting was to be, and she enlisted Esther to help her.
So they loaded their guns and went to save you two? Max spluttered. Blimey!
They had no idea we had a marksman with us, and Rachel had no idea that Paul would show up either, Jackman sighed. Let alone get himself killed. The arrangement was that he would go straight home with the money.
What happened to that money, sir?
Asked Robbie. There was no sign of it anywhere. We can only think he hid it, Jackman said. Marie glanced at him.
One thing bothers me, boss, said Max. The guns they used. They only had air guns at the farm. They would have hurt the bugger, but not kneecapped him.
Jackman nodded to Marie. Tell him, Marie.
I always wondered what Esther's problem was. As you know, every member of that family is fragile in one way or another. But she seemed so normal. Other than being a bit of a hoarder.
Marie gave them a rather sad smile.
Turns out she wasn't a hoarder. She stole things. That's why she lost her job and Rachel kept her at home. She stole her grandfather's shotgun and kept it hidden in her van for years. And she stole the handgun that Paul had.
Bloody hell. Where did she nick that from? Last I heard, they don't sell them in Tesco, Robbie exclaimed.
It belonged to a chap who used to give her a lift home from work sometimes. He was a Russian working in a food processing plant close to town, not far from where Esther worked, and he lived out near Hawker's Fen. She took it from the glove compartment of his van.
And it was unlicensed, of course, so he didn't dare report it, added Gary.
And luckily for Esther, even if he had guessed she was the thief, he was deported shortly after.
Jeez, it all happens out at Hawker's Fen, doesn't it? Said Charlie.
So... What's going to happen to Rachel? Asked Max. I'm totally with her for taking a shotgun to that bastard, but you can't just go around shooting people. It's against the law.
Jackman leaned back in his chair.
Well, as you know, she's been interviewed. She can't claim self-defense because Ashcroft wasn't trying to kill her when she shot him, so I'm thinking she'll get a conviction, but certainly no custodial sentence. She was in possession of an unlicensed shotgun, and she used it. But when you consider the situation,
There are plenty of other circumstances to take into account. She'll be okay, I'm sure. And hopefully she'll get some help at last.
And Esther?
Asked Charlie. Her air rifle needed no license, and oddly, both guns have disappeared. Jacob tells me that immediately after Paul was shot, Esther brought them home on Rachel's orders and gave them to Levi, who took them to his shed and sawed the barrels in half with his circular saw. He then threw them in the river. Jackman gave a half smile. Jacob was delighted with Levi for doing that, and his elder brother has really gone up in his estimation.
Guess that just about wraps it up, doesn't it?
Said Robbie. Thanks, boss. One small thing, but I think it's pretty important. You should like this, Robbie. Jackman really did smile this time. Clay Bullimore, the man whose horse was stolen, is going to offer Jacob a permanent job at his stables. He reckoned that a lad with his knowledge and understanding of horses would be a real asset. Oh, and he's beefed up security at the stables.
Brilliant, said Robbie.
Excellent result.
Excellent result all round, I'd say, said Jackman. Now we can get on with our lives again.
It's really over,
Marie whispered. Jackman sighed.
Yes, this time it really is.
Sometime around 7 that evening, Jackman and Laura left Sam watching television and walked across to the mill. The transformation was impressive.
Think you can work here? Jackman asked.
It's perfect. Being that little way from the house means it won't intrude on our everyday life.
She gazed up at Jackman, eyes sparkling.
I couldn't have wished for anything better. It's so peaceful here in the village.
And it was.
For the first time, Jackman could walk in his garden, breathe in the fresh fen air, and not look over his shoulder. Emotion washed over him, and he reached for Laura's hand, clasping it tightly.
We have a future, don't we, Laura? Now that he's gone.
Yes, of course we do. It's like emerging from some terrible nightmare, some awful dark and dangerous place, and feeling the sun on your face again.
He nodded.
Speaking of nightmares, sweetheart.
Laura looked at him thoughtfully. He leaned forward and kissed her.
What nightmares?
That evening, Marie rode her bike out to Hawker's Fen. Rachel greeted her with an offer of tea and the warmest smile she'd ever worn. Though her eyes were still puffy from the tears she'd shed over the loss of her boy, she also looked a little like Marie's team did, as if a fire had been rekindled within her. Marie told her about Clay Bullimore's offer of a job for Jacob, and the tears fell again, this time for joy.
I understand he'll be stable boy in charge of Nimbus's well-being, and he'll be able to ride him and everything. A proper paid job. Will he accept it, Rachel?
What do you think? Said Rachel, snuffling. It'll be the making of him.
Marie sipped her tea, made in a pot, with real leaves. Rachel permitted herself a single extravagance, proper tea.
I'm sorry you have to go through all this legal stuff, Rachel, but Jackman is pulling every string he can to help you.
We are right by you this time. Rachel nodded.
You know, I'd have gone to prison for that wicked man. I should have aimed a whole lot higher than his knee.
Why did you send Esther home?
I didn't want her seeing Paul like that, and I didn't want her taken to the station and questioned, not then. I knew it would have to happen, but not with her brother dying in front of her. I just told her to go home, give the guns to Levi, and look after the family.
A pellet hit his other knee dead centre and split his kneecap in half. The surgeon apparently said it was a chance in a million.
I always knew she was the best shot of the lot of them. That's why I took her with me.
The shotgun did a perfect job too, Rachel. I must say, I wonder which of you fired that particular gun.
Marie looked at her knowingly.
You said it was you, so I have to accept that, but...
More tea.
Thank you.
She smiled to herself. Rachel's reticence to answer confirmed Marie's belief that it had been Esther who'd fired the unlicensed shotgun, and Rachel's skillfulness that destroyed Ashcroft's knee with an air gun. She had just been trying to protect her daughter from a more serious charge. Marie took a paper package from her jacket pocket and pushed it across the table.
Our secret, Rachel. Don't tell a soul, you understand?
Your boy wanted you to have this, and in my opinion, he earned it, every penny.
Blood money,
sighed Rachel Lorimer, not touching it. No, this was his gift to you. He wanted to do something to support the family he loved. Take it. It doesn't belong to anyone else. It belonged to Paul, and I'm sure he was proud to have secured it for you. If he had come home like he was supposed to, he would have taken such pride in giving it to you. Rachel peeked inside the envelope and gasped.
Are you sure you won't get into trouble?
No one knows. Just us.
And as far as everyone else is concerned, he hid it, and no one knows where. End of story. Rachel Lorimer closed her eyes and sighed.
End of story.
She picked up the envelope and put it in a drawer in her kitchen dresser.
More tea, little Marie Evans.
The Patient Man, written by Joy Ellis and performed by Richard Armitage.